When one works with the land for decades, you become attached. The handoff to the next generation isn't easy. But professionals are here to help with the burden and hard feelings that can grow quicker than a weed in a freshly cultivated cornfield. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager, and this is the M2M, a look at stories important to our market-to-market audience, both behind the scenes and on camera. Mike Downey grew up on a farm in Illinois and now works with making that transition. This is a two-parter, as we've talked a lot about land, leasing, and farm succession with the co-owner of NextGen Ag. What's Roseville most famous for, other than your home, Mike?
Boy, I've never been asked that question. definitely not Mike Downey.
Okay.
But when I think Roseville, Illinois, Western Illinois, just, strong production agriculture area, and a little different than parts of Iowa. We kind of like to call it flat and black, Warren County, Illinois. And so, but rich soils, great productive area, strong land values for that reason.
It's a heavy, heavy farm area. There's been some industry. You're not that far from Macomb, and you're not far from Monmouth, where there's a college. There is some industry, but it pretty much is agriculture.
Correct. Yeah, it's very rural-based, and like a lot of rural areas of the Midwest, for that reason, it's experiencing some challenges with consolidation. And the little town I grew up in, Roseville, Illinois, it's changed a lot. The main street, a lot of the shops that used to be there are no longer. So just not a lot different than a lot of the small towns in Iowa, too.
When you were 10, 15, 20, did you think, I'm staying here? I want to be a part of the farm?
Well, I definitely realized my first year freshman in college how much of a much bigger world it was than I realized, you know. So I thought going to town to Roseville was a big event. And but, you know, when I was first time walking down the quad, trying to look at every face because I expected to know everybody, and I realized I didn't know anyone.
And that's at the University of Illinois.
Correct.
In Champaign.
Yeah.
Why'd you pick there?
Well, you know, I tell you what, I had it really narrowed down to Illinois or Iowa State. My father is a grad from Iowa State. I was actually ironically born in Des Moines, but we moved to Roseville when I was about 4 years old and grew up on the family farm there. But back then, in-state versus out-of-state tuition was a real issue, so that was kind of weighing on the decision there. But it's my understanding now, ironically, an Illinois resident can come to Ames, Iowa State University, for more reasonable than they can go down to Champaign. So.
Yeah, that was a thing for a while, the whole out-of-state and the in-state thing. So what did you study in Champaign?
Ag business major, ag business and finance. And I enjoyed my time there. Didn't have the opportunity to go back to the family farm. And ironically, my first job out of school brought me back to Iowa.
You were destined to be here no matter what.
Man,
you did,
you
is
go.
What you're trying to say. So the family farm, not able to go back. What's going on there?
Well, it's like the story of a lot of folks' experience. Just it was struggling enough to support two families alone, maybe even three when you count my grandparents. So just, didn't have that opportunity back in the year 2000. If I remember right, the price of corn was about $1.80 a bushel, and price of soybeans were about $5.50. So the thing to do was not go back to the family farm.
Right.
Unfortunately. So, I had a few opportunities, but actually my first job out of college was actually with a farm management company here in Iowa, so Hertz Farm Management, where I worked at for a number of years.
Hertz has got those offices. Their primary mission is to help run the farm, right? Isn't that what Hertz mostly does?
I would say, to represent landowners, to help, manage their land and care for it, to oversee, make sure it's being taken care of to their standards. And so great company, had a great experience with them. And but as you know, I've kind of taken a little change in path as well.
So. How different do you think this is now with what you do?
You know, it's still, I still worked somewhat even as I was managing farms with succession and transition. That is definitely a part of it, but probably primarily farm management. But today it's maybe more geared toward transition, working with farmers and landowners, on figuring out what that looks like, you know, passing their farm to the next generation. And but we have kind of since then, three of us have kind of come together and put together a new entity where we're, you know, things have kind of circled back where we're working with rental relationships as well as we're trying to match generations up. And that's a way that we can support that lease relationship. And we think the value of having a third party, unbiased third party, to help kind of have an education piece there that they can provide as the next generation is a little more removed. We see a real value, and I think that transition or that trend is going to continue.
So the name of your site right now or the company is Next Gen Ag, and so that's the umbrella you went to first, right?
Well, actually, I first met probably 11, 12 years ago Steve Bohr. He's the owner of a company called Farm Financial Strategies.
Okay.
Some people are accustomed to him or maybe heard him or read him. He writes a monthly column in the Iowa Farmer Today. But that's the that group and the reps across Iowa that work with Farm Financial Strategies work with farmers, landowners, specifically on estate planning, farm transition.
And so then the Next Gen is your new the three of you that came together.
Yeah, so
okay. I'm just trying to help figure out what that land, how that all works out.
So a longtime friend of Steve's, Glenn Moeller, is a retired farmer, landowner from eastern Iowa over by the Quad Cities. He retired after 40 years of farming back in 2015 and didn't have a successor of his own to take over the operation. And he just thought then, boy, there's an entity. We need an entity out here to help other people like me because he just didn't want to turn over his farm to anyone or rent it out to the high bidder, like people say. He wanted to, you know, he kind of took a process to find the right candidate. And so he reached out to Steve Bohr, and then they asked me with my experience at managing farms with Hertz Farm Management whether I'd be interested. And so the three of us have kind of rolled that out really just last summer. So it's still relatively new, but the foundation of it is what we call our Century Match program. And that's where we match up people like Glenn, a retiring farmer, or it could be a non-operating farmer, just as there's a lot of land in the Midwest that's owned by non-farmers, non-operators, and a lot of that land is going to transition in ownership as well. So matching them up with either a young producer or even an existing operation that, you know, is able to expand, and just matching up respective goals and criteria. And
So I've sat and talked with people who've worked at ag companies, and the way they get started in sales is they have to go cold call on people. This isn't one of those businesses where you can go cold call and just drive down the lane, is it?
It's a difficult one.
Because why is it so hard?
It's the, you know, and I was actually thinking about that today on the way over, that the this farm operation, this land, this business that people spend their whole life to put together, and but they don't want to sit down to talk about on how to keep it together. It's kind of a psychology thing, but it's not end of the day for a lot of people. It's not a fun thing to talk about because what we're really actually talking about is, you know, mortality, and I'm going to die someday, and what's going to happen then, and so not a comfortable issue or topic for some people to talk about.
Well, I think we know the dangers of being on the farm, and, you know, you always, the PTO shaft or the grain bin or whatever it is, and you dodge death so many different ways. But when you have to actually sit and talk about, you know, it's in your head that that's something that could happen every single day when you go out into an operation, any job for that matter, it could happen. But to sit there and look at the end, is that what you said, mortality? You think that's really what holds people back from initiating this conversation?
I think it's a number of things. That's one of them. You know, also, I think all of us are guilty of some sort of a deferral mentality, kicking the can down the road.
Right. Hello, Congress. Nice to meet you. I'm one.
And then I guess the other issue is, you know, right now our tax laws, estate tax laws, really encourage us not to do anything because less than 1% of family farms have to worry about paying any estate tax, some in our industry actually encourage, you know, you don't really need to worry, just leave everything to your spouse, you'll be fine. But it's all the non-tax reasons that concern us and where we see challenges occur with families.
Yeah. And I know of situations where there isn't a spouse to hand it to, or there isn't children to hand it to. How do you help people like in that situation?
Yeah, great question. And ironically, we're identifying there's more of those out there than people maybe realize. And whether it's they don't have a successor for the farm operation, but they may have some kids that will still own it, or no kids at all. And where should the land go to, you know, or what's the strategy there? And, you know, that's, I've run across a lot of those conversations. We've just rolled out a new mentoring program that we think will complement our matching program. And that's where we have landowners now, three or four across the state of Iowa, that each have about 500 acres that they would rent at a reasonable rent their land to a young aspiring farmer, maybe one that doesn't have a family farm to go home to. And we're matching them up with a mentoring farmer, basically trying to train them on what it takes to operate a farm. Mm-hmm. And then we can match them up with a retiring farmer through our matching program. But in some of those conversations in estate planning, as that program is gaining awareness, there's some landowners that have expressed interest in, is there a way that we can leave our land to benefit a program like that, that we can try to, you know, help support the next generation of the who's going to farm the land? And because if we don't, unfortunately, our biggest concern and probably the overlying reason why we put all this together is, what is the family farm going to look like in the future?
There is always the debate of how you get started as a young person, 25, 28, 30, 19, graduating from high school or some type of school, to get started. So there's only so many mentor farmers that you can have, and you're hoping for more, of course, as time goes on. Have you thought about ways that you're helping that next generation that is coming in? You do have the mentor farmer. How long are they going to stay in that program where they're going to get a chance at that first land to allow the next group to come through, or is that part of your plan?
I would say the way it looks is a 3 to 5 year mentorship. And we're hoping, because this young person has reasonable rent, no equipment costs, and discounted production costs during that period, that they legitimately should have, you know, on 500 acres, $200,000 or $300,000 saved up in capital to go buy into an existing operation. Or maybe it's mom and dad said, you know, go do your own thing for 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. and then come back to the farm, and they have some equity to buy in, or go a down payment to go buy a farm. And but, you know, I think about, you know, my family farm in Illinois, in Roseville. My grandfather came back from World War II and started from scratch. I think he started with 40 acres with a farmall M, and he was able to build a respectable farm operation. And, we're just trying to give an opportunity is all we can do. An opportunity, you're going to still have to put some work in. You know, my counterpart, Steve Bohr, kind of compares it to a baseball program where you start out in the minors, mm-hmm. and you work your way up. And that's kind of what we're trying to do with all of this we're putting together. We think it all kind of meshes together.
And who needs to have the conversation with whom first? Is it the one who wants to get in, or the one who holds the land and might be looking for a door or an exit strategy of some kind?
Great question. You know, our biggest challenge with Next Generation Ag is awareness. And I've gained a whole new respect to that, it's not as easy as it looks. I have a lot of respect for folks in the marketing and advertising. How do you bring awareness? But as the program has gained awareness, and we've had an opportunity to introduce it to the young students at Iowa State University, we've reached out to some of the other ag universities or colleges here in the state, but it is getting some interest. And I would say we are kind of the first line of defense, whether it's a landowner interested or a young farmer. But at the end of the day, it's going to have to work or be the right fit for the mentoring farmer, that landowner, and especially through our matching program, it's going to especially have to be a fit for that match that we're making there, because that's a long-term thing. And that's really why we've kind of put together kind of our own leasing program to help, you know, we don't want to just make this match, or it's almost kind of like in making a marriage. We're making a marriage,
right,
and
right.
There has to be personalities that fit.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to just make this introduction and walk away, and that's why we're supporting it with our, you know, lease relationships through our leasing program. And
well, you talk about the marriage. Sometimes it's philosophies. I'm a conservation farmer. I'm not. I want to rip it all and, you know, plow it under. I need that extra 10 acres or a 10 bushel to the acre to help my bottom line. So I'm going to rip up that soil a little bit different. That the farmer who has the land is like, whoa, I don't want that in Louisiana. How do you match philosophies in addition to some of your other criteria?
That's a great question. And that's where we spend. We have an initial profile where producers can go on our website. In a matter of 3 or 4 questions, give us an initial idea of what their operation looks like. But that's where we spend a fair amount of time on our second level of profile, where we actually sit down and try to get a good understanding of all of that,
yeah.
As well as a landowner. And it's interesting in estate planning. Sometimes it can be the little things that hurt the most, like it could be mom's china collection or some family heirloom. I compare it to what we're doing with our matching. The one I can think of the other day is we were talking about all of these things, but I think the main thing he was worried about was to make sure that his fence rows were, you know, any trees or things like that that might be come up, to make sure that those were cut out. And like he spent a lot of time his career. And so we were talking about all of these big things, but then at the end of the day, sometimes it's the little things that you have to be mindful of too.
Are the little things just an excuse for some people?
Could be, you know, it could be.
Because they really don't want to give it up. I'm going to hang on. I got to find something. Trees and a fence line. I mean, I've seen that.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I would say, but even with our own Glenn Moeller, I think it was the little things for him. It was the fence rows. It was the ditch lines. And also, I think a factor for him was the candidate he chose also had a succession plan of their own. So in Glenn's mind, he was picking someone that had a transition plan and 2 generations already set up, so his family, his kids didn't have to worry about making a change. And it really, at the end of the day, having that sort of longevity just benefits the farm and the land and all of that the most.
So both sides in this, again, I'm going to keep using your marriage here. Both sides do have to put work into this, because the one farmer who's aspiring and has the whole career ahead of them, they absolutely have to have something on paper and a plan of how they're going to do this. They can't just walk in and just say, yeah, I want to farm with you. It's just not going to work if only one side has, because this one who holds the land, just, no, I'm not ready, or no, I don't like your style, or what. I mean, there are some marriages that are just not going to work. I'm not asking for those specific cases or anything, but who needs to put more? Is there a side that needs to put more into this than another?
I would say we feel fortunate for just rolling out in August that we're working with 3 or 4 matches right now, and one successful one that we've put together. But I do foresee that we'll have a situation where a match doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to hit the reset button. And but I, you know, what I would say, if there is a common thing that we've experienced, is from the retiring generation, it may be the biggest hurdle we have to get through is relinquishing control and management.
Yeah.
That's crucial. On the young producer side, I would say sometimes we have to work through that. Sometimes they think they're just going to walk in and it's a done deal. But, you know, you have to put some time in and some effort,
mm-hmm.
and gain some trust, too, with the landowner side.
So handing things off, though, are you encouraging everybody to – or does everybody have to do paperwork? I mean, is this every terms of these deals are being written down, or is this more of a verbal agreement that you're doing?
Good question. I think as far as the obviously on the rental side, there's lease agreements that we're working with, but on the matching side, we're asking for a 4 or 5 year commitment to be involved, just to help mainly for the future integrity of the program, we want to make sure that these matches we're making mm-hmm. have a high percentage of sticking. And but between that, however we're basing that entity for that farm operation, it's important to sit down and get that in writing, whether that's a partnership or some sort of a corporation, whatever that looks like.
Somehow get something on paper.
And I think the big thing for the young generation is give them some skin in the game, but they still got to put their time in. But if we can give them a little skin in the game too, that really increases the chance of them wanting to do that extra, go that extra mile or do the little things as well.
So talk to the veteran producer for a minute for me, not necessarily in the mentor program, but why is it important that they, if they don't have natural heirs or if they do have heirs that are looking at this, that are not involved directly in the farm, why is it important for them to make sure that stuff is written, plans and wishes and desires are written down? Whether they're followed is another thing, but it's written down because at any moment it could be over. We have to. Let's face it. That's the reality of it.
Yeah, I know. We had the unfortunate case in our office where, we call it the sandwich generation. But in some cases, the next generation is in their 50s or 60s, just because people are living longer, and then there's nothing written down, but they've just been told all these years that they've been not really earning a salary. It's been a lot of in-kind gifts from the farm that, don't worry, we'll take care of you. This is all going to be years one day. And then we had the unfortunate case where they were close to 65 years old themselves, and they have a son now that's in his 40s. And at the end of the day, we just put a plan to really skip over one generation to the next, just because, again, this longevity, kicking the can down the road, and reluctancy to give up control and management from the veteran generation.
So who's at fault in that one? Not that one specifically, because I don't want to out them. But who's at fault in a situation like that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because some of it's generational. I think of my grandparents, how, they've gone through some tough times in that generation. So some of it is they scraped by and worked so hard to build it and keep it, in some cases just keep it, not losing it. And now this idea of giving it up, that I can, if I were in their shoes, I'd probably have the same concern, same mm-hmm. issue. So I don't know if we can really blame anybody, but it's all we can know is the folks to make it work, there has to be at some point willingness to give up control and hand it over. And
is there a magic age or a magic point in someone's business life where they should be thinking about this plan? Is it 60? Is it 50? Is it 80? Or is it when I've finally broken even? Or, where is it where there should be a light that says, okay, it's about time to start discussing that?
We think the time is the sooner the better.
You're supposed to say yesterday. Yesterday, Paul, is the right answer.
But the clearer that we can put a plan out to show the new generation coming in that there is a clear succession plan, and that gives them security now to make their own investments into the operation, by far that is going to increase the chances, the success of that relationship or that operation. And we have another one where we had a 75-year-old contact us about, I'm ready to talk succession planning. We assumed he was talking about probably to his son. His father was still involved, 98 years old, still following a Schedule F, actively farming. And so that's an extreme example. But sometimes,
but I don't think it's extreme as you think. Yeah. Honestly, don't think so, Mike. I think there's probably more of those than you realize.
Yeah.
Now, you probably know more than I do.
And the other thing we haven't talked about, mentioned it earlier, but our tax laws. But
yeah.
The other part of this we haven't talked about is, the folks that do want to retire, but how do you do it? How do you walk away from, get out from under 40 years of farming or whatever it is? You've been on this deferral mentality of deferring income, prepaying crop expenses, depreciating all your equipment. How do you get out? How do you do it? And because it's not as easy from other jobs out there where you just retire, where you have W-2 income. It's a whole nother ball game. So that's probably a big piece of this too, is how to do it, because it's just not as easy as saying I'm ready and let's just do it. It's much more difficult than that.
You have to look around and look what you're, figure out what parachute's going to go on your back before you jump out of the plane.
Exactly.
So let's go there. What? All right. I'm 70, 71. Time to retire. Oh, my children are gone. They like the farm. They're not involved in it actively. Now what do I do? I don't have that natural succession. I know, obviously, sure, time to go in, and maybe I can put this land up as a mentor problem, but maybe that's not for me. I want to go travel and not be around anymore. I'm just ready to be done. Is there ways to help me?
Definitely. I mean, really, there is going to be a high percentage of these situations where there'll be kids that may be owning land in the next generation that do not operate it themselves. And that's clearly the trend. And so, I mean, that's where we think it's important to have a family meeting just to ask the kids, how do you feel about owning this land one day? If there's four kids, there might be, you know, maybe one or two that do have interest and the other two maybe not.
So what do we do with that one?
And because I'd say by far the most common plan that we see when people come into our office is we're just going to give everything to our kids equally. But that can also create some challenges.
I live nearby, and I've occasionally driven a wagon, or I've always been in there. That one's not gone, done anything about it. Why should they get the same amount? Sounds like my gospel lesson in church the other Sunday, but yeah.
Sure. So yeah, and I kind of watched my own father go through it with his siblings, because they each were given the farm outright, and then you know, sure enough, there was one that wanted to be bought out, and they had to kind of work through that. So that at one point, our fourth generation farm, we didn't know if it was going to stay together or not. So they were able to work it out. That's great, but we're seeing that happen all the time. And so, but if we can identify the ones that really want to truly own it, let's figure out a plan to facilitate that. And the less we have to have the kids figure it out themselves, the better. And but so if we can identify clearly the ones that want to own it, let's just find a way to do that. And then if there's other assets, or how do we treat the other kids fairly? Or if all kids say, yeah, we all, like you just said, we drove the tractor, we all mm-hmm. want to own a piece of that, it's multi-generational, that's where we would maybe go down a different road and say, well, what's the structure look like for them to own it together? And there's a lot of good entities out there that we favor for land, like limited liability companies, LLCs, where it's an opportunity for mom and dad to put some rules in the operating agreement on facilitating buyouts or lease options if there is a farmer in the family, if the units ever get outside the family for some reason, a divorce situation or a creditor situation, it allows that entity to get those units back, purchase them back, and do the best we can to put a fence around the whole ownership. And because what I always think long-term, and this drives my wife nuts, because I like to think, well, two or three generations down the road, what if this LLC is still there, and what if the family rallies around it and say, this is kind of neat, and they start buying more land? It's going to benefit them all as landowners, but they also have a lot more power keeping it together in one pot versus splitting it up into separate pots.
But sometimes people need to exit. And the other three might not be in a position to take care of that fourth. You mentioned two and two, or the other two can't take care of the other two, and or the two who want to stay don't have the financial wherewithal to pass it to those other two. How do you help them?
Yeah, and that's, you know, sometimes we hate to see it, but sometimes if it comes to the sacrifice of parcels that have to be liquidated to help facilitate a buyout. But, you know, that's why we really take it, really kind of dig deep and walk through those scenarios. What's this going to look like? You know, maybe that you can sustain one buyout, but what if two? And mm-hmm. and what if there's three? And, you know, and that's where we kind of make sure mom and dad kind of look at it from both sides to figure out what is fair. And one side, if we're discounting a purchase price, is it fair to discount the inheritance of my kids one day? On the flip side is, even with a 25% discount, it doesn't work today for those that want to stay and buy them out. It doesn't work. when you do the math on it. So is it fair for those that want to stay and continue on our legacy to put them in a position where it may not work? So it's, there's no cookie cutter about it. That's right. Something you have to work out with every family.
Next week, we'll lay out some more scenarios that may be close to home for many of you. I'm Paul Yeager, and we really love it when you tell a friend you've listened to one of our episodes. Thank you for listening.